Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's CCU on Understanding Severance Fees in the U.S. I am Alexis Hermosillo, the State Climate Policy Coordinator for CCL. This evening, you will be hearing from CCL's recent summer legislative interns who developed tonight's presentation to share with you all. As you may know, CCL's work highly focuses on carbon pricing efforts, and you will soon discover the commonalities between a carbon price and severance fees in the United States. And these commonalities make the reality of effective state-level action more near and more possible. And with us tonight, we have Amanda, who is a senior at Indiana University Bloomington, studying environmental management with a focus on political science and economics. She was one of CCL's legislative interns this past summer term, where she worked with the DC legislative team and conducted research on severance fees. Now she is the Environmental Resilience Toolkit Coordinator at the Environmental Resilience Institute, a research organization at IU, where she helps provide local governments in Indiana and the Midwest with resources and information tailored to their communities for climate change action planning. Amanda hopes to continue working with environmental policy issues upon graduation. And the other person that we have with us tonight is Matias Alberola, who is a sophomore at Yale University from Denver, Colorado. At Yale, Matias is a prospective environmental studies and political science double major who is a member of environmental policy lobbying and socially responsible investing student organizations. In his free time, Matias enjoys playing soccer, running, and exploring the outdoors. And for today's presentation, some of the things that will be covered is you're going to learn a lot about severance fees, the scope of severance fees in the U.S., tax revenue, relation to carbon pricing, and trends and steps for action. And with that, I'm going to hand it over to Amanda.
Great. Hi, everyone. Thank you, Alexis, for that introduction. So I'm going to outline three learning goals for today's presentation. The first is establishing an understanding of severance fees in the United States. The second is to examine the connection between severance fees and carbon pricing. And the last one seeks to understand current trends and future steps for action. So with that being said, we can go ahead and begin. So first, it's important to understand the basics surrounding this fee to better understand its relevance within the United States and within the idea of carbon pricing. What exactly is a severance fee? The National Conference of State Legislators defines it as a tax or fee placed on the extraction or production of natural gas, oil, methane, uranium, timber, and other critical minerals and natural resources. So it's pretty straightforward. So it's a tax on natural resources, which are severed from the ground. So they call it a severance fee. As fracking and other technological developments have increased access to oil and natural gas deposits throughout the United States, many oil and gas dependent states have used this fee as a way to ensure that communities heavily impacted by oil and natural gas development and exploration are properly reimbursed for any environmental degradation that directly results from those industries. For example, communities may experience reduced air quality, which in turn may cause increased local cases of respiratory issues, such as asthma or bronchitis for said community residents. It's important to note, though, that this fee is only limited to the impacts of fossil fuels specifically and not climate change as a whole. So in other words, a severance fee reduces the externalized costs borne by public via health and community impact of the oil and gas industry. There are four different categories of how this fee is levied to collect revenue. The first one is a production value tax. This is the most common method used, and it's levied on the market value of the produced oil or natural gas. Basically, this entails taxing at the point of production without taking into consideration transportation or distribution costs. The caveat with this is that it's difficult to implement because it requires constant monitoring of the changing market price. So price fluctuations makes the revenue prediction for this fee difficult. And it's also very common. This is used in Arkansas. The second category is a production volume tax. This is levied on the volume of the natural resource produced, as the name might hint. So per barrel of oil, per thousand cubic feet of natural gas, et cetera. This, unlike the first category, does not reflect price fluctuations in the market. And for this reason, states design volume-based severance fees with a low flat rate so that it can easily be adjusted annually depending on price fluctuations and to ensure consistent state government revenues. This is used in Texas, Wyoming, Colorado, and Idaho. Third, we have the value and volume tax. So this combines the production volume and production value taxes, and it is used in Montana and Oklahoma. The incentive for this approach is that it increases the respective state's income from their natural resource industries while also reducing state pressure on the industry when said industry lags. Lastly, we have tax incentives and tax credits. These encourage or discourage the production of certain wells and extraction sites. However, some sites may be exempt from this tax, including deep wells and lower production wells. So that sums up the four categories of how severance fees are levied. Next, it's also important to know how this tax is distributed throughout the nation. As I mentioned previously, severance fees are highly concentrated in heavy oil and gas dependent states. Currently, 34 of these states have implemented taxes or fees on extraction, production, or the sale of oil and natural gas, such as Texas, Wyoming, Oklahoma, Louisiana, and more. The allocation of severance fees fluctuate from state to state due to differing regulation approaches. However, generally speaking, severance fees produce a relatively small portion of the state's government revenue, and we will touch on more of that later. However, if you are interested in learning more about the specifics of severance taxes in your home state, the National Conference of State Legislators has a great interactive map that provides more detailed information on severance policy specifics. And I can go ahead and send that link in the chat right now so you have access to it. So now I'm going to hand it off to Matthias, who is going to talk more about the tax revenue. Thank you very much.
So the most important question when evaluating severance fees is quantifying their impact and revenue generation. In 2018, state and local governments collected a combined $12.7 billion in revenue from severance taxes, which is equal to 0.4% of their general state revenue. The peak of severance tax collection was in 2014, with a total collection of $19 billion across the U.S. Amanda will later be covering in the presentation some more specifics on collection trends of severance fees and will help better explain revenue fluctuation that we've seen across the past decade. Generally, severance tax revenue generation is concentrated in a handful of resource-rich states. Texas and North Dakota accounted for 60% of the total revenue of collections across the entire U.S. in 2018. For Texas, though, severance fees actually don't make up as large of their state tax revenue generation. This is because of their large economy, population, and general tax revenue collections. However, in states with larger industries, these severance payments can make up an even bigger percentage of their total collections. In Alaska, for example, severance fees provided 37.5% of total state collections. And in North Dakota, severance fees generated 41.8% of its state tax revenues from severance fees. Now that we have an understanding of the scope of revenue that is generated from these severance fees, it's important to look at where that money is distributed. For the most part, these funds that are collected are deposited into state general funds, which support police and fire departments, the development of parks, and other community development initiatives. The rest is deposited to fund conservation or environmental cleanup work, and also to balance state budgets. Some states even use the funds in more innovative ways, such as supporting infrastructure development, energy innovation, and meeting environmental and resource management needs from fossil fuel impacts. So you now may be thinking to yourself, how does this connect with Citizen Climate Lobby's mission in advocating for a carbon price? Well, let's find out. So now, as you can see here, there's a chart that presents the similarities and differences between carbon pricing schemes and severance fees. First, starting with the similarities, the very exciting thing is that severance taxes put a price on the social costs and impacts of natural resource extraction. they internalize some of these externalities associated with natural resource development. Now, moving on to the key differences between the two policies, severance taxes are an indirect way of factoring a price on carbon, into consumer and business decisions. This is very, very similar to a gas tax, for example. Second, severance taxes are based on a percentage of the monetary value of the oil and gas extracted at the point of production. Carbon prices, on the other hand, are based on emissions generated and set in terms of dollars per ton of emissions. So that's really looking at the point of emissions and the use of resources. And so because the severance fee is calculated based on volume and value, it's prone to fluctuations in the impact of the tax rate and thus how much revenue is generated. Carbon price, on the other hand, has a consistent, transparent plan rate. Next, states collect more revenue from taxes at the point of extraction than from all other forms of carbon pricing. And when you actually divide the severance fee revenues by energy-related CO2 emissions, the national average in the range is in the range of $2 to $3 US dollars per ton of CO2 emitted. Also, a carbon price has a direct goal of reducing emissions. Severance fees do not. A carbon fee puts a price on all emissions generating activities, whereas severance fees only put a price on natural resource extraction. Finally, severance fees don't increase incrementally over time as they do with a carbon price. So I hope this has provided you with more clarity of the scope and goals of severance fees, along with some of the key differences between a carbon price and severance fees. Now we'll be transitioning to look at current trends. As you can see in the charts above, which look at severance fee revenues from 2011 to 2015, severance tax revenue has been on the decline in several states. Collections from tax revenues were already decreasing in 2011 and 2015, even in states with the largest natural resource extraction economies. As you can see in the chart, these are Alaska, Texas, and North Dakota. And this trend has only continued with the impacts of the coronavirus pandemic. States dependent on natural resources, such as Alaska, North Dakota, and Wyoming, took the brunt of tax revenue hits in the second quarter of 2020 after the COVID-19 outbreak stuck. Weak energy prices resulted in major severance tax declines in energy states. And as I mentioned earlier, severance taxes have traditionally provided funding for various state projects, a major one being economic development and infrastructure repairs. We just learned that revenue from severance taxes has fallen, especially in major coal mining counties. The impact of this trend is that there's now less money for projects like road repairs that were put in place by mining operations of the past. This photo in the slide above is a clear example of these impacts. In Dorchester, Virginia, severance fee revenue fell from $6 million in 2011 to about $1.25 million in 2015. This created a funding shortage for severance fees. We will continue to see this, especially as mining and oil extraction decline, and alternatives such as a carbon price on emissions will be able to better support these funding initiatives. Thank you all so much for your time, and now I'll be sending it back to Amanda as we conclude the CCU. Thank you.
So the question that remains is now what? Let's put this information into context. As the Senate Finance Committee is discussing a carbon pricing bill, this presentation serves to note that 34 states already have something very similar in place. This is not a foreign, never before tried concept. It is normal, it's already American, especially in fossil fuel producing states. What is being discussed in this context is widely practiced in the greater context of the US state systems from states that price fossil fuels to the Alaska Permanent Fund example. While these policies might not be the same identical thing as we learned from Matthias, the concept still is very similar. So let's take an unhelpful misconception that pricing carbon is hard to do and highlight the flexibility of how state-level Pigouvian taxes have in fact worked. The dots just haven't yet been well connected. So here are some take-home points. The pricing of fossil fuels already exists on the state level in the United States in the form of severance fees. And state governments are acknowledging the need to reimburse communities impacted by fossil fuel extraction, as we learned at the beginning of the presentation. Even before the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic, severance fee revenue collections were already on the decline. Now these trends have only compounded, forcing tighter budgets on the state governments, which in turn impacts infrastructure projects, government funds, and environmental cleanup initiatives. This only further highlights the importance of a carbon tax to adequately put a price on carbon to support impacted communities. This brings us to our next step, the implementation of a federal carbon pricing system to continue and expand upon severance taxes and put a robust price on fossil fuels, which would first allow for a more consistent and predictable fee, which is better for state governments, consumers, and producers. And secondly, it would allow us to have the direct goal of emissions reductions and would apply to the entire economy, thus increasing the impact and actively fighting to lower greenhouse gas emissions.
I also just wanted to share a couple of quick links, one of which is obviously our fearless state policy coordinator, Alexis, who's also on the line tonight's email, as well as where you can go to ask questions, because obviously after tonight, if people have additional thoughts or they want to share with each other, please go to the forums. It's a robust discussion. Dozens of conversations are happening there every day. We'd absolutely love to have your voice, your clarifications. So check those out. And then lastly, there is a wonderful series of research that our friend, who's actually been a part of some prior CCL events, Dr. Barry Rabe out of the University of Michigan, has put together. He is an expert on all things carbon pricing, and his most recent line of research has been really looking at severance fees and state level basic, you know, severance policy. And so if you're interested, I put a link to a recent presentation deck that he's given, as well as a recent article based on the methane fee that has recently been announced as part of the larger Senate Finance Committee's proposed package. So thank you again so much for joining us tonight. I'm gonna unmute all lines and stay safe out there, everyone.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Citizens Climate Lobby's training program. You can tune into more episodes anywhere podcasts are available. Inspired by what you heard today? Join Citizens Climate Lobby to advocate for bipartisan climate solutions. Go to community.citizensclimate.org to find more trainings, resources, your local chapter, national action teams, discussion forums, and more. Be sure to like our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Citizens Climate. We also invite all of our listeners to subscribe to our YouTube channel for more inspiration. And together, we are creating the political will for a livable world.